And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick will join us in just a bit. Chase McCabe out on the west side in Bellevue. While Max Herz is on the board today back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We start on a very sad and somber note.
You're not kidding.
This is not a good week.
No.
Not a good week. Don Sutton. Now Hank Aaron.
I'm sitting here. I'm watching highlights as we speak. Like, as we start the show, I'm on YouTube watching Hank Aaron highlights. Just, because that news literally just came out. And baseball legend, not just a Braves legend, but will always be associated with the Atlanta Braves. I remember going up to the wall in the parking lot at Turner Field, because that's where Fulton County Stadium was, and they had the wall still standing there from when he broke the home run record. So just so many memories. Obviously, I didn't see him play. It was well before my time, but he was always around. I got to meet him very briefly at a game one time. Very, very nice man. Just tough day for baseball.
Yeah, that's
Henry Aaron.
That's putting it lightly. I see MLB Network has gone wall to wall, and it looks like their guest on there right now is Bob Costas.
Well, that's a
not
good
surprised.
One to have.
Yep, not
good
surprised.
One to have. And you know, he had been around. I mean, he was still a senior vice president with the Braves, 86 years old. I mean, I don't know if he was necessarily there every day, but you know, you would always see him at games, and he'd go and watch because he loved baseball. He loved the Braves. So I got MLB on now. Man, this is tough.
I know. Like I said, Don Sutton and now Henry Hank Aaron. Golly. Jeez. Not a good week.
No.
Not a good week at all. Like I said, on a very, very sad and somber note, by the way, at age 86. Hard to believe, Hank Aaron. By the way, some still recognize him as the home run king.
Yeah. I mean, I might be one of those people. I mean,
well,
I
might,
you know,
or you are. I mean, you.
When Barry Bonds broke it, number one, I did not like Barry Bonds. I didn't like the Giants. I just didn't like them. And
that's weird. Most did.
Yeah. And so
that's not a
I know,
Giants
sarcasm. But because of my Braves fandom, I was like, nah, you know, Henry Aaron is still the, and I was one of, I don't know why, but you know, you talk to people with the Braves, he's Henry Aaron. He's Mr. Aaron. I was like, he's the home run king. I mean, I know Bonds broke it. You can say but Hank did it the right way. Let's just put it that way.
People don't understand what he went through.
No.
To accomplish all that and what he had to deal with.
No. Mm. 44. Every time I see the number 44, it's immediately Hank Aaron.
Not sure if I would have been able to pull it off. I'm not talking about the baseball part.
No, it was the other.
Walking in his shoes. I'm not sure. Or at least pulled it off the way he did. How about that?
Yeah, but think about it, too. Now, I know he spent a good majority of his career in Milwaukee, but playing in Atlanta in the 60s, I mean, just the things that he had to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm-mm-mm. Tonight, the Predators hit the road for the first – well, they've already hit the road. They're down in Big D. They left yesterday, but they are going to be playing their first road game of the year. Tonight it'll be the Predators and the Dallas Stars. The Dallas Stars, what would you say – how would you describe probably their start to the season? Do you think that they've had a good start, a bad start? What do you think? When you've watched the Stars, what have you seen? Wait a minute. They haven't
a little slow out of the gates?
They look old and sluggish, don't they?
Just a little bit. Just haven't seen a whole lot from
them.
Yeah,
I know. They look, at times look invisible, you know?
I'm waiting for the text or the tweet. Guys, they haven't played a game yet.
Guys, know your job. They haven't even played.
Don't you know that that's your job as media? You're supposed to do that. You're supposed to know that stuff.
They've had COVID. Don't you know that? Why did I just sound like a Valley girl or not even a Valley guy from decades ago?
That's kind of the voice I just kind of
sometimes I feel like that's what our text line sounds like, you know, or Twitter. Guys, jeez. It's your job. Dallas hasn't played a game. Or they do exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation right. point, exclamation point. Stars haven't played.
You know what's funny? This this subject matter, just to give you a little bit of a tease, it's going to come up at 12 o'clock today.
Oh.
Going to come up at 12 o'clock today.
I will let you know, too, that I've been sitting on mine all week, and I am ready to go at high noon. Let's just say that. That's good. I hope you just made the list as spirited today.
I have a feeling it will be.
Okay. I like it. I like the tease there. It's very, very good. We got another loaded show for you again. We're excited about today. And just in about 10 minutes, we'll catch up with Dan Walken. We'll talk about Tennessee's hire of Danny White, not the former quarterback. Boy, did we have fun with that yesterday. Danny White is the new athletics director at Tennessee, and he will be sworn in today. He will raise his right hand, and he will swear to fix Tennessee athletics, in particular football.
Now, does he swear on the Bible, or do they make him go touch the rock?
I'm
or,
not
like,
sure.
How does this work?
I think let's just start with the rock. He's got to swear by touching his left hand on the rock, raising his right hand, and swearing. Remember, the president has already put, you know, has already put pressure on him, said it's going to be the best decade of athletics Tennessee's ever seen, starting right now. It's a lot of pressure.
Well, listen, it might be the best decade of that Tennessee athletics has had in the last 20 years, so there's not too far to go there. But, yeah, I wouldn't put that kind of pressure on
him. Or maybe he's comparing the last 10 years to the upcoming 10 years. How about that? I'd say I feel pretty good about that statement.
I feel pretty good about that, too.
Yeah, I feel like they will be better in the next 10 years than they've been in the last 10 years. I think I feel good about that. Am I willing to? Yeah, I do. Am I going to lock that in? I'll lock that in.
I mean, I feel really good about the hire.
I do.
You know, and I think a lot of people do. But
it seems like, you know, I don't think any of us could have thought the way this week played out that Tennessee had the ability to make what at least on the surface looks like a universally thumbs up. Everybody says universally great hire. Right. You know, we've all seen that. You know, I used some examples yesterday, right? When Tom Herman was hired, when Shaka Smart were hired. I mean, everybody universally was like, oh, my goodness. Great hire. They said it about both of them. Fox at Georgia in basketball. Oh, my goodness. What a great hire. I mean, we could
touch
go on and on.
Home run.
Yeah, we can go down the and, you know, and we know how that all played out. But then there are other times when you go, oh, my gosh, what a great hire, and it plays out that way. Now we're about to find out, is it going to fit the bill? Right now the bill says great hire. Everybody is standing ovation. Great job. We'll see. I mean, you look at his resume in a short amount of time, 41 years old, and what he's been able to accomplish and the bloodlines in the family, it certainly looks like he is set up for success at UT, right? But it is UT. And
it is.
They've been, we don't need to recant the last 12 years or so, but it's been a dumpster fire, as we all know. So can he change that culture? Can he get the right person in there to get them? Because you can with the right hire. You can change this narrative, but you have to get the right hire. You have to, or you're just going to keep going down the same rabbit hole over and over again. We're about to find out how Danny White does that, and we will hear what he has to say a little bit later today.
Yeah, and the thing that stands out to me, though, Darren, and you tell me if you agree with this, is it actually looks like Tennessee had a plan, and they executed it. They knew when they went on the press conference, they fumbled and bumbled, and we all made fun of them for it. But behind the scenes, at least, it appeared that they had they knew what they wanted to do, and they did it. And they did it fast because they knew they needed to, that they had to get in front of this as quickly as possible. And 2 days later, they have their guy. They have the AD. And he'll be introduced today. I'm sure he is already – well, number one, I believe he went into the interview and said – they said, well, what are you going to do about football? And he had a list. That's typically what you do. You have your plan, and he has his plan in place. But that's the thing that really stands out to me. Tennessee had a plan, and they executed it, and so far it seems like a good plan. Got to see how it plays out, but that's why there's more hope, in my opinion, than there has been in a long time.
Is it silly to say I want him to sound polished today? I want him to sound like he knows what the heck he's doing. Is that crazy?
No.
Is that too much on the surface? I mean, like, that's shallow. Come on.
No.
I want him to sound good. I don't know. I haven't heard. I mean, I'll be honest. I haven't heard Danny White interview. So I'm curious. That's going to go a long ways with me, at least out of the gates. Like, what does he sound like today? Does he sound like he knows what he's talking about? Does he sound polished? Does he sound like he has his stuff together? I think
that's
fans,
very important.
Tennessee fans need to hear that today. They need to hear that today. They need to. Somebody needs to stand up there with a microphone and not have us all shaking our heads like we did on Monday and 3 years ago. I mean, they need that. They desperately need that. So you don't think I'm crazy for saying that?
No. I think what needs to happen is they need to introduce him and then get out of his way. Chris in Nashville on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com says, I hope UT has the coach somewhat lined up too. No, I don't. I hope that Danny White has the coach lined up.
Yeah.
He's the one. Tell the boosters to get out. Tell the chancellor and the president, like, hey, I got this. Got it under control. I'll let you know who your head coach is.
Yep.
That's how it needs to be. But, no, you're not crazy. I think I agree. He needs to get up there. And by the end of that press conference, we need to come back on here and go, all right, I'm signed up. I'm a believer. Let's go.
For once, I know we've said on the show, like, it's not about winning the press conference. It's about what happens after that. But I really think Tennessee needs to win a press conference.
Yeah, you got
to
win it today.
Like, it's time. Like, Monday, Philip Fulmer, hey, well, he did a really good job recruiting. What? Really? Did you just say that?
That's why he just got fired.
The chancellor, I mean, Plowman and the president, Boyd, some of the stuff they were saying, it's like, what in the world is happening? Jeremy Pruitt was a disaster in front of a microphone. Like, it's just time for them to actually win a press conference. Like, they need a good press conference today. They really do. It sounds silly, yep. But I just think everybody needs to – we need to hear a press conference coming out of Knoxville. We're not sitting here doing facepalm emojis or shaking our head. Like, that needs to happen today. Hopefully Danny White can do it. We'll talk with Dan Wolkin from USA Today about that. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Greg. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Friday morning. Our show brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. Dan Wolkin, USA Today. Always enjoy our chats with him. It's been a while since we've caught up with him, and it is time to do so right now. Dan, good morning. How you doing?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing fantastic. I said in the last segment that typically I'm not win the press conference guy. You don't have to win the press conference. It's what happens after that. But then in the same breath I said, but, it is time for Tennessee to win a press conference. I mean, Monday we thought was embarrassing. Jeremy Pruitt, more times than not, when he grabbed a microphone, was embarrassing. Butch Jones became embarrassing. Do you agree it's just time for somebody to grab a microphone in Knoxville and everybody go, okay, all right, this guy, this person sounds like, they're in control and they know what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, look, I get what you're saying, and I think there's value in that. But, look, this is about competence. And I don't think you can really convey competence based on these sort of anodyne questions and answers that you typically get at a press conference like this, in a setting like this. Like, he'll get everybody excited and talk about how great Tennessee is and all the possibilities he thinks are there. But this is all about competence. And I think with Danny White, like, you have a track record of competence, and we'll see like how he handles the various challenges that he's going to have at Tennessee, and there's certainly a lot of them. But I just think that you've made a hire here where there's a track record. You've made a hire that people, in college athletics know who he is and what he's about. And I just think that, you know, that's ultimately what's going to turn this thing around is competence. But I certainly understand what you're saying, you know, and I think Danny is smart enough and eloquent enough to get up there at a press conference today and hit all the right notes.
I'll admit, Dan, I didn't think it's been such a dysfunctional family for more than a decade. I didn't think Tennessee was capable of a hire like this, where when I say a hire like this, universally, when it happened yesterday, everybody was like, wow, okay, really, really good hire. I didn't think they were capable of that. Why does Danny White, and like you said, the pedigrees, the bloodlines and the family, this guy's only 41 years old and he's already accomplished a lot in a short amount of time. Why is he the right guy in your opinion?
Well, look, even though he came from a family that has kind of blanketed college athletics, and I'm sure you guys have talked about, you know, his father's the athletic director at Duke, has been around forever. His brother's the coach at Florida in basketball. He's got another brother who's the athletic director at Florida Atlantic. So, like, he's been around it, but it's kind of their family business. But he had to go prove it on his own, you know, and he certainly started out. Took you know, jobs at smaller places, got his first athletic director job at Buffalo, which is a difficult place with not a lot of resources, and turned around their fundraising operation and hired a good football coach and hired some good basketball coaches and got them in the mix to go to the tournament. Goes to UCF, and, you know, I think I was not as impressed with his second hire of Josh Heupel, but certainly Scott Frost came in and turned it around fast. And Danny thinks outside the box. He's going to be aggressive in fundraising. He's going to come in and immediately be able to identify what he likes and what he doesn't and what's necessary. So he's just a very professional guy who understands what this is all about.
In your opinion, I know this is tough to answer, but you just kind of laid out his mindset in different situations, tougher jobs, right? Buffalo and UCF, now you're in the SEC, a little bit easier sell. You've got all this money, or at least you think you do. How do you think he's going to try to tackle getting the next guy right? How do you think he'll go about it, in your opinion?
One thing about Danny White is he thinks outside the box about these coaching hires, you know, and everyone's going to put out a list of six names or eight names. I would guarantee you that Danny White's list will be different than most of the lists that are out there. I remember when UCF hired Josh Heupel, literally until the moment that name was announced, nobody in the business thought Josh Heupel was a candidate for that job. So he's going to look at things a little bit differently and find some coaches, and I'm not saying guys he'll ultimately hire, but people he'll certainly talk to, who maybe are not on the radar in the same way that some of the bigger names are that have been out there. Like, I don't think that Tennessee can get Luke Fickell. I don't think you can get Matt Campbell. So once you sort of get out of that tier, I think it's kind of wide open. And there's probably going to be some names in the mix that we all know, and I think there's probably going to be some who none of us are thinking of. And I certainly hope and expect that Tennessee – and the administration there is giving him full authority to make this hire and to own this hire.
Dan Wolkin is with us, USA Today, talking Tennessee. And so, Dan, do you think that, and just your opinion on this, do you think that the better plan would be go with the up-and-comer or the, you know, younger, however you want to phrase it, or go find the established Power 5 guy that, and there are a couple out there that have done it before. Do you lean either way on that?
No, not really. You know, I think there's always an excitement about somebody who is well known. You know, I think Tennessee fans, like if they announced tomorrow that they were hiring Gus Malzahn, just as an example, I think Tennessee fans would probably be pretty excited by that because it's somebody they know, it's somebody they're familiar with. On the other hand, I think you could look at his tenure at Auburn and say, you know, are we kind of damning ourselves to a ceiling? Because Gus certainly has good qualities, but there were also some things at Auburn that frustrated people. And so I think you can go either way on it. I just think that the main thing is that that you've got a new AD. This is going to be his hire, and he's got to be backed up, whoever he chooses. You know, if it's a name that people initially don't like you can't let the fan base or radio host or anyone, you know, bully him out of this. You've got to back him up, even if it's somebody who, you know, people hear the name and go, who? That might happen here. And I'm not saying one's better than the other, because ultimately it's all about finding somebody who's equipped to do the job, and Tennessee's a pretty complicated job.
I said before you came on, and I know you look at the press conference earlier in the week and you go, how could they possibly have pulled this off as quickly as they did? But it, at least behind the scenes, after the announcement yesterday, felt like they had a plan, and they executed that plan. And it's the first time in a very long time that I have felt that Tennessee had a plan together behind the scenes and actually pulled it off. Do you feel that way too?
Yeah, I would venture to say that they did not, after that press conference Monday, pick up the phone and start calling athletic directors and saying, are you interested in this job? I think they knew very well who they could possibly get and what it would take to get them, and that they had been working on executing this plan for several weeks. And that's certainly a good indicator from the chancellor, who is relatively new to this at Tennessee, that they're serious about trying to fix the problem, that they know what they're doing, that they've got, you know, all the pieces in place, from the money to the search committee to all that stuff, to now go out and go hire a football coach. And, you know, the problem with coaching searches is you don't always get who you want, or you may go into it with some preconceived notions about who's going to be interested, and then once you get into the process, that's all it all turns out to maybe be a little bit misleading, and you know, there are guys who use interest to get raises and all that stuff, and you know that going in. But you know, certainly I think because you've hired a good athletic director who's done this before and who's had success before, there's going to be a floor to this coaching search that's actually going to be pretty appealing, I think, for Tennessee fans.
We know that recruits have pulled out. You have players entering the transfer portal. And, you know, players typically nowadays, they go and they play for coaches, whether the head coach or assistant coach. It's not necessarily going for their love of the school. Sometimes it is. But now that they have the AD, they know they got to go through the process. Do you think that that stability maybe will sway some of these recruits or players on the roster to stay, or at least give them a little time to hold out to see who the next guy is going to be? Has he bought them some time there?
It's hard to say. I think typically with most players, once they have it in their mind that they're gone, they're gone. You know, every now and then a guy will come back or reconsider. Tennessee, I would say most of those players, maybe not all of them, are probably pretty attractive to other schools to take as transfers. So, you know, in that week of silence, they're going to be heavily recruited by these other schools once their name hits the transfer portal, and maybe even before then, but that's a whole other story. But I do think a lot of them will probably be gone. Of course, you don't know who the coach is, what kind of system they're going to run and all that. Maybe some do come back, but I think you have to go into this with the mentality that you're kind of starting over.
How bad do you think it's going to be sanctions-wise? I know they threw out level one, level two, but what do you think's around the corner for Tennessee football when it comes to that?
Yeah, this is a little bit of a guess on my part, but I actually don't think it's going to be that bad. And I could be wrong, but I think some of what has been verbalized about the Tennessee situation was maybe a little bit overwrought, because they were trying to, you know, use it as a predicate to clean house.
Sure.
I am certain they did find violations, and I'm certain that when you fire nine people related to those violations, that there's probably some stuff in there that is disturbing from an NCAA standpoint. At the same time, they've clearly been aggressive in trying to address it and turning themselves in, investigating themselves, and that's typically the kind of thing that the NCAA will look favorably on. So I don't know that it's going to be that devastating. But okay. I you know, until I see actually you know, what the allegations are, it's hard to say.
Yeah. All right. Last thing. What did you make of the Clark Lee hire at Vanderbilt? And when you look at kind of the pool of candidates he's trying to lure onto his staff, he is talking to a lot of NFL people, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think that search ended up kind of in the place that seemed obvious at the beginning, just given his station in the business and his ties to the university and to the city. Look, I certainly think from Vanderbilt's perspective, it wasn't some slam dunk that Clark Lee was like going to want that job. He had a pretty good job, defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, a job that could have launched him to potentially a more attractive Power 5 job. So I tend to believe him when he thinks that he can get, or that he has the commitment to improve the infrastructure there, that he can get done what needs to be done from a personnel standpoint and in recruiting. So that's all good. I think he's made solid hires. I think he's off to a nice start, but like any first-time head coach, we'll see.
Yeah, no doubt. Dan, always appreciate the visits. Thanks for doing this. Continue to be safe. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Dan Wolkin, USA Today. By the way, three coaching changes in the SEC East this offseason with Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and South Carolina. We'll come back more on the other side. Trent Dilfer and the Tennessee Press Conference in the second hour of the program with the holiday season behind us. The sports calendar is still in full swing, and this week is no different. From collegiate to professional sports, there's no shortage of action. There's no better place to get in on all that action than with DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. If you haven't tried it, DraftKings Sportsbook, then what are you waiting for? Jump in there. Celebrate the football playoffs. They're going to give all new players to DraftKings a chance to get 100-1 odds. Yep, that's all you have to do is bet $1 of your own money on any football game this weekend. And if your team wins, you cash $100. While they're excited about the football playoffs, don't forget the basketball season has tipped off as well. You can also check in on daily odds boost as well. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, making it easy to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME, and when you sign up, you'll get 100-1 odds on any football game this weekend. Once again, that code 1025GAME for all new players for a shot to win $100 on any football action this Sunday. For a limited time, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Restrictions do apply. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Appreciate Dan Wolkin for joining us back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Arthur Smith is in Atlanta as the new Falcons coach. And as we told you all week, it was being speculated that somebody was about to come out of retirement. And today we found out he's coming out of retirement. Dean Pease, back in the NFL. He's coming home. No, wait a minute. He's going to Atlanta. He's going to be the Falcons defensive coordinator. And Dave Ragone.
Yeah.
Will be the new OC. Remember, Arthur Smith has been around the Titans facility for now a decade. So, a couple familiar names on Arthur Smith's staff. Dave Ragone, coming over from the Bears, will serve as the OC. What do you make of Dean Pease coming out of retirement like a boxer, like this is now six times, to now join Arthur Smith and the Falcons?
Well, it's a brilliant hire on Arthur Smith's part.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go wrong there. And just to say this, too, I was reading Arthur Smith did say during his press conference he will call plays, even though Dave Ragone will be the offensive coordinator. Art is going to call the plays.
I don't think anybody's surprised by that.
No, not at all. But I do think it was an awesome move by Arthur Smith. And for people that, and we talked about this, I think you brought it up, you know, is it kind of a slap in the face to Vrabel and the Titans? I don't look at it that way.
Thought did cross my mind.
I know, but I don't see it that way because it's Dean's decision. Dean made the decision to retire, and Arthur asked him. And now, if we find out, you know, if Vrabel gets up there, like, well, hey, you know, I I asked him to come back, and he said no, and then he goes with Arthur. Then, okay, yeah, that is a...
Well, if Dean was coming back, though, and you're in the situation that you're in, why wouldn't you be asking him to come back?
I do know that Vrabel is quoted in saying that he didn't have the heart to bring him out of retirement again. So if that's all true and he didn't ask him for that reason, then, you know, you have to respect that.
You're not bringing him out of retirement. He came out of retirement on his own. Nobody's going to bring somebody out. Like,
but Dean, you got to ask him.
Yeah, Dean Pease is his own man, right? He's been around forever. He's in his 70s. I mean, he's going to do whatever he wants to do. And I don't know. I mean, I think it was, I mean, you know how this works. Guys know how this works. That's what I was wanting to say. Guys know how this works. And you talk to people. It's like this business, right? We hear stuff all the time that you hear it. I mean, but you don't think the circle of coaches isn't the same? Like, you don't think anybody hears, like, hey, Dean's bored out of his mind. He's dying to get back on the sidelines. You don't think that circulates at any point? You think Arthur just texted him and said, hey, how's retirement? Dean says, I'm coming back. I think I'm coming out.
Yeah,
and
no.
He's like, okay, well, you can join this staff.
Well, and there was an article. There was an article written about it that Dean Pease is saying, you know, kind of getting bored and thinking about it.
But they all know that. So if everybody knows that, then you're not asking him to come out. You know that he's thinking about coming out, or he wants to. You know,
but think about this too, because here's another thing that we don't know. Because of what you just said, those coaching circles, you know, Arthur in his last meeting with Vrabel, or a phone call with Vrabel, hey, you got any advice? I know you just did this a few years ago. Vrabel could have said, listen, call Dean. See if Dean is interested, because that helped me tremendously to have him on my staff. He's got a lot of knowledge. It'll take a lot of pressure off of you. I'm not saying that happened, but I'm not saying it didn't. So we don't know. That's the bottom line. We don't know what all happened behind the scenes. What I do think, though, is Arthur Smith with his staff, because I think Dave Vergone's a good hire, too. I like Dave Vergone
He was great when he was here, but he's never been an OC, so it makes sense. I mean,
it's a good step.
Right. He's been basically a quarterback's coach, you know.
Right.
Passing game coordinator, quarterback's coach. So, we got to know him when he was here. He was great to deal with.
Sure. So, I think you got to do what's best for you, and if Dean Pease is like, hey, Arthur, I'm in. I'm ready to come out of retirement. Well, what about Vrabel? No, Mike's cool. He's understanding. You know, who knows? But the big thing is going to be you have an awesome defensive coordinator to build your defense in Atlanta now. And it could be a year. It could be two like it was here. Who knows? Just enjoy the time you have and use that wealth of knowledge.
Now, on the flip side, here, Bill O'Brien is now in Alabama. He's in Tuscaloosa. Looks like he's the next OC. Doug Marrone is the offensive line coach at Alabama now. Think about the staff Saban is putting together. Bill O'Brien is the new OC. Doug Marrone is his offensive line coach.
The clinic is open. It's open for NFL coaches, too.
Man, it is good to be a little Nicky, man. Gosh. He's got two NFL head coaches to be his coordinator and line coach.
But they've both been head coaches in college, too.
I know.
So
I know. They've done it right. They've done it in college and the pros. So, with that being said, what's the game plan here? Where's this going?
It's a very, very good question that I don't have a very good answer to. Now, names that are we feel like Doug Peterson has said, hey, I'm going to take a year off. That has been out there. So if you're going established candidates, take Doug Peterson off the list because he's saying he's going to take a year off. Anthony Lynn is interesting. His name has been floated out there for a coordinator position. In Schottenheimer available?
Mm-hmm.
He's out there. I kind of get the feeling that Vrabel's going to go outside. At least that's kind of what I hope he does. I think there are a couple of candidates internally that, you know, wouldn't be awful. But when you talk about trying to keep continuity, I think that's important. But I also think it's smart to change that up, because if you keep it going the same over and over again, you're going to have players get complacent and teams are going to figure you out. So if you can go and find someone that maybe is similar to the system that you've been running and bring in a new set of eyes, you know, similar to what the Preds have done with, you know, their assistant coaches, bring in new voices, bring in a fresh set of eyes, that's going to be a good thing. And that's what I feel he needs to do on defense and on offense, is, you know, get somebody that's going to gel with you and what you're wanting to do, but that can be a little bit different and keep it, you know, keep other teams guessing. So, but to answer your original question, I have no idea. I don't know who they're going to hire, and I don't even know if Vrabel knows yet. I'm sure he started the process, but
that's kind of a problem. I don't know how. I mean, none of this is new stuff. I mean, he knew. I mean, he, you don't think he wasn't talking to Arthur? I mean, Arthur's telling, hey, you know, I think I got a real good. They know. I mean, the defensive side, you've had all year to think about that. I mean, there's, you know where you are with that. I kind of feel like I'm walking into the DB's room right now with my answer, because I think I'm going to, the more this drags out, I think I'm going to have to learn how to backpedal a little bit more on this, because I've said I think both are coming from outside, and the longer this goes on, it's not feeling like it's coming from outside.
Yeah.
Because, well, once again, on the defensive side of the ball, he could have hired the minute the season ended. The next day he could have had an announcement. He could have been talking about, I mean, there's nothing out there. By the way, there's nothing. You hear any chatter at all?
Nope.
We've heard all kinds of chatter about.
That's how it is with him. You don't really hear a lot of chatter.
Fair. I mean, that's fair. But you're right. I mean, there's nothing out there. So I'm starting to wonder if I need to start learning how to backpedal a little and change my answer, because it's not feeling like it's coming from the outside, especially not both sides.
No, and I will say this, because I know a few people that we've had on have brought up Keith Carter's name, the offensive line coach, of him being elevated. I know Pat O'Hara, the quarterback's coach, his name's been thrown out there, Tony Dews. So, I mean, I look at what they did with Arthur Smith. When Arthur got the job as offensive coordinator, I think we were all like, okay, cool. Don't know. I mean, I know he's been here. Don't know a ton about him, but he's obviously lasted through a few head coaches. That says something. Just have to see how it plays out. It's not a sexy hire at all, but it worked. So he could go that route, and it could work and it could not. But he could go outside and it could work and it could not. So it's a crapshoot either way. The big thing is going to be finding the right person that's going to gel with your quarterback, because you know what you're going to get in Derrick Henry, but we have seen how this works so well between Arthur Smith and Ryan Tannehill, and you got to keep that going. Are they going to have the chemistry right away that Arthur Smith and Ryan Tannehill had? Who knows? But that's going to be the big one and the toughest thing for him to figure out. So I hear what you're saying, but Mike Vrabel doesn't tell us anything. So you ask him about an injured player, and he looks like he's going to rip your head off. So who knows? Who knows what he's thinking?
We'll be back and wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. Trent Dilfer in the UT press conference. Danny White getting sworn in at The Rock. Maybe, maybe not. That's things coming up in the second hour of the program. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick has joined the fray. Chase McCabe as well. Good first hour to this point. I was watching the Blue Jackets and the Lightning last night.
I did too.
Guess who didn't play after the first period?
Mr. Dubois.
Yeah.
Well, never could have seen that coming.
Yeah. Yeah. They lost in overtime. By the way, Braden Point, the overtime killer to Columbus and others. But Dubois did not play after the first period. He only had like 5 minutes of ice time.
Did not play.
And, of course, Torts was asked after the game. And it, what was his exact words? Like, yeah, that was a surprise. I was just like, this guy is unbelievable.
Typical Torts answer.
Yeah. So here is, and I thought it was a pretty interesting discussion. Anson Carter, you know, typically on NBC, they don't really take people to task. But they were, Anson Carter especially, and Sharp were saying that, you know, Tortorella is making the general manager, his job, Kekalainen, and in Columbus, extremely difficult, right? Because, one, this looks like this marriage is going to end poorly. Like, it's going to end in divorce, right? I mean, the coach and the player, this is going to end where he's forcing the general manager's hand, and we all know if everybody in the league knows you have to get rid of this person, you're not going to get maximum value. So I am very curious to see where this is headed. But it looks like it didn't take long, but they're sleeping in separate beds. Let's just say that.
Well, they're in separate houses right now, man. I mean,
and, you know, it's almost as if John Tortorella wrote the script before the season ever started, because he went public in the interview on the radio station saying, yeah, he wants out. He was honest about that. We had a meeting about it. However, I'd like to see him tell me why. He hasn't really said anything about that. And then he went on to say, I'm going to have him on a tight leash. Now, he didn't sit him in either of the games against Nashville. But let's be honest, Dubois was not the force that he has been and will be. You know, he's only 22, and he's too good of a player. Everybody's going to have a couple of games here and there where they're not big factors. But he wasn't a big factor in that two-game series. And then I guess John Tortorella said, I've got to send the message. But it's almost like he's writing his own script. It's almost like, go ahead, do something about it. Like, either trade him or fire me. Remember, John Tortorella's in the last year of his contract. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of speculation of what is Columbus going to pay their coach. John Tortorella is the winningest all-time American-born coach, you know, just ahead of Peter Laviolette. The two kind of battle back and forth for that title. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's done such a good job in Columbus by most people's accounts that if he hits the free agent market as a coach, he'll get another crack at it somewhere, right? Somebody will want him. So it's almost as if he's tempting the management to say, okay, you don't like how I'm doing this, and if I can't get more out of this guy right now, I don't want to sit around and wait and see the other shoe to drop, right? This is not on me. I'll start paying attention to the next thing. I don't know if what's going through his mind, but that's a quick trigger right there, because he basically told everybody he's going to do it. First time the guy doesn't do well, I'm going to sit him down.
And they're not winning, which is another. See, you know, you knew that. In fact, I was even saying that on the show, right? Like, it's every loss that mounts. Like, what, you know, this is when is the explosion coming? And you know where the explosion will be directed. It'll be directed at Dubois. He's got to take it out on somebody. He's going to take it, you know, he's going to take it out on him. And sure enough, didn't take long. Last night, 5 minutes ice time. Didn't play after the first period.
I do think it's interesting, though, to watch because of, Willie, what you brought up, that Torts is in the final year of his deal. They're not winning. At what point does Kekalainen go, all right, you know, I can't do this because I'm not going to get max value for the player. The team's not winning. There's obviously a rift that's developing right now. Do I just go ahead and do it? Because there are some good names available that you could bring in right away, including a former Blue Jackets coach in Gerard Gallant. So you could make the move here shortly, and you're, you know, somebody that can come in and change the whole culture right away and get them back on the winning track, you know, could be available. But Torts is going to get another shot too. I mean, he can win, but I think it's very similar with him and Peter Laviolette of the welcome wears off eventually. It's just because of the intensity.
Well, do we know the exact reason? Is it playing in a smaller market? Is it playing in Columbus? Is it the head coach? Like, what is his reason? Do we know?
He has not made that public, but the sense, I'm going off of what Elliot, who has been all over this and been doing homework on it. It's the talk of Canada right now because the kid is from Canada, and you got a lot of Canadian teams that would love to have Dubois, right? He was a big-time draft pick. He came up through the junior system and was on everybody's radar when he was, you know, 17, 18 years old. So I think the sense is he'd like to play on a bigger stage. Not necessarily like a big, big city, but
Like Panarin, he made it clear. I mean, he wanted to play in the Big Apple. He wanted to play in a bigger market, right? Wasn't the deal his girlfriend was a model? He wanted to be in a big-time market.
Right.
And so he signed with the Rangers. So I was wondering, is this the same type of case where he wants to just play in a different market?
I think so. If you had to guess one thing, that would be my first guess, but he hasn't said that. And that's got to be really frustrating to Columbus. They've built a really good culture. You know, it's taken them a long time to get something to really lean on, have some playoff success, and then you got guys that ultimately are looking to go elsewhere. So that it's a no-win situation, because as you guys were referencing, especially with Anson Carter, you put the GM in a terrible spot. How's he supposed to make that work? Right? Oh, he wants to be and it really starts with Dubois. If Dubois had just kept quiet, then that would have helped. And you just play out the string. Sometimes you just can't, I don't know, you make yourself look worse. And now I don't know how the Blue Jackets get out of this.
It's a very tough situation to be in for them.
Although Elliot has reported that once that word got out that he does want to be traded, that there were some phone calls coming in with some pretty good offers. Like, people are looking to try to jump at the chance to get this guy. So if you can create, that's your only chance now if you're the Blue Jackets, you might well pull it off. Is you just say, okay, give me your best offer. We got to make this happen. But if you can get two or three or four teams competing, then maybe you can bargain a little bit and get a good return. But you can't either Tortorella's got to go, or you got to make this move quick. And just move forward, because
well, that's
another month of this in a 56-game season. You're just, you know, which way are we going? We're waiting. How it's going to play out? That's not going to work.
But if it's more about the market, the coach is a change in the dynamic. That's why I asked. Because if
he's
not
gone either way. I don't think a new coach changes. I don't.
That's what I'm saying. So it doesn't really matter. Like in this case, you know, people trying to paint it's either the coach or the player. We know how that always works. The superstar player always wins out. Well. Yeah, in most cases they do, but in this case, if it's because he doesn't want to play in that market, yeah, he may still not like the coach or love the coach, but it's really about him playing elsewhere, then it doesn't matter. Like that dynamic, get rid of, you know, don't re-up his contract, get rid of him, whatever. It's not changing the dynamic. If the kid wants out, he wants out.
Yeah, and if he doesn't play hard and tries to, you know, kind of go that route of, well, I'll kind of force everybody's hand because I'm just not going to play very well. I you know, and just not really be dedicated, which he said he would, right? He's tried to say the right things. I'm going to be a great teammate. I'm going to play hard. And the message back from Toro was like, well, you better, because you're going to be on a short leash. So I don't know what Tortorella saw, right? But you know how coaches are, especially like Tortorella. If you see something you don't like in a player, we've seen coaches in plenty of sports. Kevin Stallings was famous for it, right? If he saw something that somebody wasn't hustling back or, you know, forgot to play on a simple thing, you know, that boom, you're out. I mean, the decision's made. It's not like, well, let's give him another chance. No, it didn't matter who it was. You're on the bench.
Well, we can talk to a coach like to start the second hour. Trent Dilfer will join us on the other side. Darren Dotick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.